Let me put it that way. If someone offered me to edit the chapter entirely and perfectly in exchange for me allowing them to violently kick me in the nuts, I would actually seriously consider their offer. So yeah, there's just, I can't, I'm sorry, I can't relate. I don't understand. I hate editing with every fiber of my being.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything Lit RPG, Progression Fantasy, and Royal Road.
Welcome to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast where a German guy is attempting to make friends with a French. Hi.
Hello.
Alex, how are you doing?
Desperate causes. I'm fine. Thank you for having me around. I apologize in advance for the heavy French accent, but you know, I've been told that it's attractive, so I'm not making any efforts to lose it.
Absolutely, perfectly fine. People have told me in the comments of several podcasts the Maxime podcast, that they actually love the French accent, and it was great.
I'll keep it light, so it's remains unintelligible.
Yeah, I mean, this time actually with video, so if you're looking at me, then you can see me. Hi.
Hello.
You can also see Alex, so I decided to try this whole thing with video because apparently YouTube likes it. So if you're new and you're on YouTube and you click this, you fell into my trap. Hi. With me today is Alex Gilbert, better known as his online handle, Mechanimus, author of novels such as The Calamitous Bob and the recently finished Journey of Black and Red, a book that I love. So why did you write a story about a vampire, lady vampire, in the 1750s in Southern America?
Right, so there is an extended universe around it, in a way. So, when you get into a genre and you figure out something, for example, the first time I got into urban fantasy, I read Jim Butcher, who remains one of the greatest names. So you usually read like the first recommendation, the thing that always pops up. So for example, for progression fantasy, I think it would be Cradle or Mother of Learning or others. I will not list them here, but you know what I mean. And then you realize you love it. It scratches every itch you never knew you had, and you're absolutely in love with it, and you absolutely want more of it. So you will dig a little bit, and then you have like 10, 12 great names and great series, and you will devour them, and they're still great. They're absolutely great. It's a little bit different, perhaps not as fresh as the very first experience, but really fun. And then you start getting into the middle of the pack and things get a little bit iffy, and perhaps there are some of the stories you don't really finish, and then you start looking for more, and then you start like scratching the bottom of the barrel. And this was what I got with basically vampire fiction, because it was heavily dominated outside of great name like Anne Rice, great names, sorry, like Anne Rice. It's heavily dominated by really bad romance. So after like the third or fourth romance or more than that, actually, I was like, this isn't really a good use of the vampire mythos. There's not one vampire. It's more like an archetype, a bit like Achilles or Spider-Man. Some of the ideas I really loved, some of the concepts I really loved, and some others much less so. I had this flash of inspiration. A lot of the vampire fictions are seen from the perspective of an outsider, and then the vampire are presented as like old mysterious creatures. And what if I wrote the old mysterious creature, but from the beginning? And with all the struggles and interesting situation of being a complete outsider to society to the extent she can't live in the, like during the day, etc. And I had a really powerful burst of inspiration, and I wrote for 2 weeks, almost 4,000 words a day after work. So it left me in a state of mental hangover when it was finished that I have not reproduced to this day. And that's how it started. And then the second story started, Bob, the Calamitous Bob, because I needed a humorous counterpart to Journey, which was already long going and quite serious. I mean, in tone at some point. And it started as a sort of a joke thing that I wanted to write to relax. And what happened is that Bob had a much larger reception and much larger audience than Journey. So actually, my income took off, and then Bob became the sort of flagship project, if I'll use the corporate term. So that's what. And the
his corporate.
No, the forbidden language. No. Well, all jokes aside, the last story is more like I had several other projects I had the time to think about. And actually what I did is I went on Patreon and I said, all right, here is, I think, two or three projects. And I wrote 50 pages of each, and you got to vote for which one you prefer. And the one I wanted win was called Sidis, and it was a demon story with a male protagonist who was a newborn demon. And I really wanted it to be really wild and with a lot of...
Sorry, what did you call it again? Salvo?
No, Sidis. Yeah.
I'm
know
sorry.
That's a great point, because that's actually... there are a lot of similarities with Melas's work. But Melas will... The main character goes pretty quickly into a world that's not her own. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to explore the cities, which is the lowest city, and then go to other worlds. But I would have preferred variety of very different ones with very different levels of magic, technology, etc. But sadly, this story was completely crushed by the other one, which had a female protagonist and is the cyberpunk with magic and mixed with Portal Fantasy, and is a homage to the great Korean Portal Fantasy, such as Solo Leveling. And that one won, so it's the one I'm writing right now.
That sounds pretty cool. I just really like the way you presented it to me before the show, kind of reminded me a little bit of Tower of Somnus.
Yes.
But okay. I really dig those stories. I mean, I write science fantasy. I love this mix where mythos meets machine.
Tower of Somnus was it was not exactly an inspiration, because the focus was much more on the social struggle aspect of the dystopia. And what I wanted is more of a, I mean, it was more three people against corporations in a hopeless setting, while for me it's more of a class thing of magic users against not magic users. So for me, class warfare is more the focus for the social aspect of the story.
Did you integrate the whole corporate struggle, cyberpunk stuff at all with it?
Yes, I come from a rather peculiar background that I'm trying to make use of. I actually have a bachelor in political science. So we studied religion, economics, politics, of course, history a lot. And I also have spent a lot of time in Asia. So actually the setting is a fictional place off the coast. I mean, fictional in the sense that it's newly risen from the waves. And so there's a melting pot of Southeast Asian cultures. So I really love to include a lot of layers to this world. So there is a corporation, but it's not corporation against people. It's corporation against a centralized government in a struggle for more like political influence in a situation where everybody's in a Cold War balance, because every megacorp is led by extremely powerful users. So essentially, that's all so strong that any battles between them would be too devastating to the city. Especially because it's surrounded by monsters, it's surrounded by wildlands. So they just can't afford to go to open war. So there's this delicate balance of power between those different users. And there's also a balance of power between the ever-increasing population of magic users, who are nicknamed Gleams, and the normal public, who are actually the only ones who have access to implants. So a low Gleam will be about as dangerous as an augmented human. So there's a lot of different power at play, and this is really the sort of environment that's extremely alive that I really want to enjoy playing with, even though I'm not exactly really good at politics myself or understanding of politics. But if there is a lot of threads to pull on, there's a lot of opportunity for fun arcs, and also I feel like it makes the world more alive. The one of the flaws, in my opinion, of a lot of young adult stories or a lot of novels is that there's only one big social issue, and the entire story, including the main characters, will heavily revolve around it. And it's really good for movies, for example. A Child of Man, I think, does that extremely well. But I really enjoy making the world alive in a complex manner. And for me, I really prefer when there's a lot of different issues and people simply have their agenda, people have their goals, and they're often not heavily reliant on the main character. And the main character has to navigate this complex world and take into account the fact that simply they're not the center of this world. And if they want to make an impact or they want to not make an impact, they need to take all these factors into account. I think it makes the story more immersive in a way.
This is pretty dope. That one. The actual Royal Road Readers. I actually went down and were like, that's the thing I'm voting for. Sci-fi female protagonist. Yep.
No, it's true. My first two are Ariane and Vivian, and such a terrible lack of imagination. I apologize.
Why? Like, okay, they are not very standard American names, I feel.
Yeah, pretty French, actually. Yeah, although Vivian is from the Arthurian mythos, so I think. I'm not sure. I would have to double check. I honestly, this is really far outside of my area of expertise, I'm afraid. Calimitus Bob has a lot of reference to the Arthurian mythos, and Journey of Black and Red is much more reliant on Greek mythology for names and symbolisms.
Yeah, we spoke about it. I don't know if you want to talk about it again. The audiobooks for Journey Black and Red, because I loved those. I really did. Yeah. And it breaks my heart that there's not going to be an audiobook for the fifth and sixth one.
Unfortunately, the sales were too low, so Podium has shelved this project for now. The narrator, Holly Jackson, I think her name was, is really excellent. So the issue is that in order to increase the sales potentially, I would have to go to KU. And I made a commitment to the Royal Road community that Journey as my first story would remain online for free forever. And I don't intend to come back on this. However, my hope is that either I'll end up having it done by someone else, or perhaps eventually if I take off enough, there will be an incentive for Podium to return and finish, complete the series. Since Journey is completed now, there's a possibility that it might happen.
So if you're listening to this, go on Audible and buy those audiobooks, or I will come to your house and find you and ask you very nicely. There you go.
For legal reason, I do not approve of this message. That's a joke.
You very much do approve of me coming to people's houses and threatening them. Okay, good.
I mean, please. No, absolutely not. That would be irresponsible. People will like what they like, and please buy my book. And, you know, just talking slowly, trying to hypnotize them with my French accent. Okay.
Did you ever consider maybe doing a Kickstarter?
Nope, because the main issue is not means, because if I want to have the rest done, I think I can do it even out of my own pocket. The problem is simply time and effort. It's we're moving, we're having the family expand, and I have two other projects and a lot of things to do. Just too busy, simply too busy. Don't have the time.
Yeah, okay. I got it. I feel your pain. Just started the book launch and now I'm back from vacation and I've realized, oh crap, I only have 3 more days until my Patreon backlog runs out. So guess what I'll be doing tonight? If you are a friend of the Kazoo ad, you have to be very, very strong now.
I regret to inform you that Sherlune went and bought the tier that removes the kazoo ad from all podcasts. And now it is gone. So you got Sherlune to thank for that. On the other hand, if you want to add the kazoo ad again, there's a tier for that too. Thanks so much for listening, and let's get on with the show.
Writing, just like all of no. But yeah.
Editing.
Oh, this editing. Is even worse. Yeah.
I love editing. Like, editing is where you take the clay that you shaped on the wheel and you trim it into a beautiful vase and, like, make it all smooth and polished. And then you glaze it. Editing is so cool if you do it right. And then you have, like, really cool sentences that you put in that you've never thought about while you're just, like, regurgitating words onto the screen. Ah, man. Editing is so cool.
Let me put it that way. If someone offered me to edit the chapter entirely and perfectly in exchange for me allowing them to violently kick me in the nuts, I would actually seriously consider their offer. So, yeah, there's just, I can't, I'm sorry, I can't relate. I don't understand. I hate editing with every fiber of my being. It's horrible.
I think that's how co-writing work, right? One guy just does all the ideas and the other guy just goes in there with a chainsaw going like, I can do this better.
That's true. That's
cool.
True.
Cool. Awesome.
If my ego cool. could accept someone else touching my baby, I would totally think.
I mean, I will gladly offer to kick you in the balls if you want. Like, that's your thing.
No. That was a metaphor. I do not actually encourage people doing it.
Alex Gilbert walking back on his promises is the first one.
No, my internet reputation is ruined.
I mean, okay, another shout out. I mean, you could gain levels out of it, right? Have you read Taking Hits?
No, actually, I should, because I have Patreon access, because I'm following when Ascension fails, Reincarnate and Try Again. So I could, but haven't read it yet. I'm so backlogged.
You wish you had like 5 days, right? 5 days for one.
But, if I have 5 days, I would binge play Starfield right now. But yeah,
I can recommend going to vacation in Italy and just, you know, reading all the skills and like binging through that. That was good. All right, but speaking of, you know, editing and all that kind of stuff, what's the best advice you've ever gotten as a writer?
Does it count if I came up with the advice myself after listening to several?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll let it count. I'll allow it.
There's a lot of advice that they asked on. I'm sorry, I spent a lot of time on Reddit, but there's a lot of advice that asked. And one of them that I remembered was which sort of keyboard should I type on? And my first reaction was one of, you know, I was a bit speechless. I mean, like, just like you can write on your iPhone and you can still write it's words. They don't exist. They exist like virtually. You don't need to have your special keyboard. Just write. And eventually I realized that it linked back to another post I saw about someone saying, if you want to ever succeed in writing, you need to write like 2,500 words a day or something. And then Neil Gaiman actually drops in the conversation and say he wrote his masterpiece. I forgot which one. At 150 or 300 words per evening, per night. So
Coraline.
That's very nice. Yeah, I honestly don't remember well enough. But what was striking is that, okay, so writing is a medium that's about as diverse as humanity itself. And I'm being very pompous here, but essentially it's true. It's just like the most basic medium for storytelling that you can think of. Mm-hmm. And, or one of the most basic, I don't want to argue that point. And there's almost infinite variety in the number of stories or way that you can express yourself or create art or engage in discussions. But what we don't talk about is that there's actually also an infinite variety of methods to writing. And not everything will work for everyone. And a lot of people burn out because they have expectations of what they should be doing instead of what works for them. And that's like I think that's the crux of it, is that a lot of different people will work in different ways when they create. And there's even someone who I know, Matt has, I think, who mentioned that when he realized when he was writing, he was speaking the words at the same time, because like for him, it was important to voice what was going on. And actually, it's a great advice. You should read what you're writing so that you get the pacing and the rhythm of the sentence and the sentence structuring right. But regardless, the thing is, there's a lot of different methods. And what will work for somebody else will not necessarily work for me or you. So there are a lot of good advice, like you should write a little bit every day, which just is a way of saying you should practice regularly, simply. But that don't take it word for word. If you need to break, if you need breaks every 3 days, 5 days, 2 weeks, just take the break, spend a few days without writing. What's important is there's... What the most important thing is, find what works for you. Find the rhythm, the method, the technique that works for you. If you are wild, just writing the subway like I did, or not. If you absolutely need an absolutely controlled environment with your favorite keyboard, the cup of coffee, set this like that. If you only write 200 words per day, that's also fine. Like, the important thing is, don't give up. Just keep creating and find your path and find the way to create that makes you happy. And don't necessarily think that because you're not writing as fast as someone else or using the same method as someone else that you're not going to succeed. That's not what's going to work. Everybody who wants to write should find the method of writing that really makes them, allows them to flourish, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I know some people really love dictation.
Yeah.
Right. I know some people who don't edit at all. I know some people who edit while they're writing and then never touch it again. I know some people who need to let it rest. There's so many vectors. I try to map them out at some point, kind of like, when do you do what? And it was almost impossible. There's just too much.
Yeah.
It's, you can't break it down. Yeah, really good advice. So what is the best keyboard?
I have no idea. I started writing on my phone and... Honestly, I would still do it on occasion. So, like, don't ask me. I'm chaos. I am actually the most productive if I change environment constantly. So, yep. So I'm not a reference. Also, I can't afford a lot of keyboards in terms of room and availability. So,
I type better on my stupid laptop than I type on my like really good ergonomic keyboard. It is really weird. So this goes to show, you're right. And I just saw that darkness fell upon the land in where you are.
Oh, light. Just one moment.
Maxime, is that you? Are you doing a thing again?
Sadly, no. All right.
He didn't say that it's going to be dark.
I mean, his name is Lloyd Harold, and it's pretty much in the name, right? What else do you want from me, Maxime?
Is it also the one thing you would go back to? Just type regularly or not in the subway or?
No, I when I read the first things I've written, there's different things that I would improve. I don't think there is like one absolute flaws that, except maybe just like the overall quality. But I don't think there's like one absolute flaw that I need to erase. But there's some major issues with pacing that need to be fixed. And pacing is very important for stories. It's an extremely delicate balance between managing expectations, staying fresh, but not overstaying one's stay. It's for me, it's very complex. And it's one of the things that I struggle with the most. At the same time, I think it's one of the hardest things to get right. And the other thing I would try is to improve my prose, because sometimes there's good stuff, but a lot of time I think would have a lot of sentences or paragraphs would have been improved by just speaking them out loud and then realizing when there's consonances or alliteration. I think those are the terms, but I'm not certain if it translates.
Yeah.
So just mistakes in terms of, it's very light mistake, but those are stylistic mistake that when people read the story in their head, they will hitch mm-hmm. on a few words, or there's a, mm-hmm. a sound that will be repeated too often, etc. And those are actually quite easy to fix. You just have to read the thing out loud, or at least out loud in your head, and then can already improve the entire thing. So those are the two things I would definitely work on. There is one last thing, but it's only for Polkemeters, Bob, is realize you need to plan your system well in advance from the beginning to the end, or else you're absolutely a mess of things, and everybody who likes Delve or Elaine's story, Beneath the Dragon of Mine, will absolutely hate your guts because your skills make no sense, they don't advance in the right thing, and where's your table of statistic at the end of each chapter, and just like, I should have taken lead RPG aspect much more seriously than I did. Great thing.
I mean, for the flow, I guess you'll just have to get kicked in the balls a lot more.
No, stop mentioning. No. No, pros and yeah, flow is much more a thing of just speaking the things and reading the things.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why I love it so much is because I don't like poems, but I love poetry.
Okay, how does that work?
Like Darkest Dungeon, for example.
Yeah.
That's not poems, but it's poetry.
The narrator, you mean?
Yeah, the narrator, for example, mortality clarified in a singular strike. My God, that's good, right? Yeah. And I love those, and I wish at some point I can write as well as the guys who wrote The Secret World. God, it's such a good story. The Secret World was an amazing story held back by the fact that it's a video game, unfortunately. But they have these collectibles that are literally just story. You collect it for the story, and most people collect them all because the story is so good.
Yeah, that reminds me of I think a series of games like Cultist Simulator. I think that's what you're referring to. Then, like, just great writing in general. Yeah.
Mm, yeah, absolutely.
You're right. We always need to keep the value of a great prose in mind when we write. Never grow complacent because overconfidence is a slow and insidious killer.
Exactly. Nice. Wow. That was very, very,
very good.
Secret.
I also played Darkest Dungeon, so that's why. It was very pleasant.
Cool. Awesome. I also love these video games that actually do something with their prose, where it's not just a vehicle for the dialogue.
Yeah, it almost becomes part of the game's identity because it's a specific style and just stays with you along with the visuals and everything. Yeah, I think I got it.
Mm-hmm. The problem is, of course, is when you do stained glass prose, right? Beautiful to look at, but you can't look through it or there's nothing behind it. Which is ironic, considering I'm going with the whole like stained glass aesthetic. But I don't want to talk about Name of the Wind again. But Wise Man's Fear.
Feel free to rant.
Is I don't know. Like it's a meme, and people are going to be crossing out their bingo cards by now. But Wise Man's Fear. No one ever talks about it because nothing really happens, and it's just 1,200 page epic. It's just poetry, which is great. Because I love that kind of stuff, but at the end I felt like, so what actually happened in this book? And the answer was like, not really much. He just went and finger banged an elf, and that's something else. Like I don't know. Like that's the only thing I really really remember.
Yeah, it went down. So what you're saying is like stained glass prose is like something that's hiding the lack of content behind the prose.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a concept I did not know. Yeah. Very glad to hear about it.
Yeah, you want your prose to be a window into the story. And if the prose distracts from what's behind the window, then you have a problem. But also if there's nothing behind it.
You have a problem.
You have a problem, yeah. And he was all... I mean, I spoke about Name of the Wind, one book that you love. And why is it awesome?
One of my favorite... authors is actually a couple, and they call themselves Ilona Andrews, and they made one of the series that inspired me to write. Actually, they were one of my favorite author. I don't know if they're very famous or not. It's very hard to say. And then the series Magic Bites, essentially was female protagonist, and who's a badass. So you can see the how it was inspirational. And between the two of them, they're really good at everything. So the romance part is very convincing, but also the action part, the police procedural part. Basically, I warmly recommend them. Some of their stories are much more romance-oriented. So, like, caveat emptor, I guess. But just, like, watch the reviews or read the reviews or something. But otherwise, I think it's one of those the authors who manage to have no aspect of this story which lags behind the other. Like, if you have romance, you have romance within the context. So sometimes it's romance within the context of war, or romance within the context of legal affairs, and you have action with politics, but the politics is really bare bone and often stereotypical. So a lot of stories that have this issue where one of the aspects is simply like at the minimum level. Mm-hmm. But for them, everything they do, every aspect is really polished. So they were one of the major inspiration for me because they are really their worlds are extremely alive, internally extremely coherent. Everything sort of makes sense, even though it's fantasy or post-apocalyptic things. And anyway, really love that.
Yeah, right. Was the thing mutated tomatoes? It's mutated tomatoes or tomato plague that killed everyone except for like a handful of people and like all the magical beings. And that's why the magical beings came back out.
Isn't it like Kim Harrison's series? This one?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
We've read a lot of things in common and played a lot of things.
Yeah.
It's really amazing to find someone like who has almost exactly the same cultural background as I. At least the adult one. It's this Kim Harrison, I think. And it's about the like which private detective.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So which one is the Alan Henry's one?
So basically it's the story,
the vampire one.
I mean, there are vampires, but they are a very secondary thing, and they are presented as bestial creatures, like cursed being. But the idea is that there are waves of technology and magic. So when magic returns every day, the technology fails, and when magic leaves, technology returns. So people have to adapt to having both. Or neither really functional. Yeah. And like if magic is here in with a lot of power, like advanced weapons don't work anymore, and like skyscrapers start to crumble and everything. So the setting is post-apocalyptic, and all the mythical beings from almost every culture are coming out of the woodworks. You have like Celtic monsters, Jotuns. Japanese monsters, whatever. Oh. So it's really cool. And the main character has access to a very specific word of magic that goes through words of power and a secret identity, which I will keep.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Like my girlfriend at the time read them a lot, and I was like, I'll read those. And I wrote a vampire story based off of that, but not in Royal Roads. Things.
No, I should read more traditional fantasy, to be honest. It's just no time.
It's so hard. Also, ever since I started writing myself again, it's so hard to read because you always feel as though
you should be writing instead.
You should be writing instead, or you want to write. So, if I read a story that's just slightly off of what I would have written, my mind goes like, how can I use this in my story? And I'm like, no, let me get into this.
Or the Raven's Dagger curse, or of when he stops writing for 1 month, he starts 3 new projects at the same time. Raven.
He's like, I will calm down. I will only write 6 series at once. Takes 1 day off. I got 2 new ideas. I just gotta. I can fit them in somewhere.
Yeah, that's Raven. Okay, and he makes them all work, so I don't know what to
say. Yeah. I'm struggling at 2. I'm like, oh my God. I mean, also the podcast is, of course, a bit of a series, so.
And time-consuming, I imagine.
Okay. So, we are almost at the 1-hour mark. Do you want to do shout-outs?
There's a two story I'd like to shout out. One of them is from so it's a friend of mine, so but I really love it, and it's called Night Nation, and it's probably what I would want my children to read as a coming of age story.
You know what time it is? That's right, it's a new ad, and this time I have two amazing stories for you to check out. First one is my friend Saving Throw, who writes a story called So When Am I a Hero? It's a system apocalypse that is quite frankly amazing. I don't like system apocalypses usually, and I devoured that one, so go and check it out. There's a link below the podcast. The second one is from another friend of mine, because I have two friends, called The Infinity Dungeon by Reject Humanity. Premise is actually pretty cool. Guy goes hiking on the Appalachian trails and stumbles into the only and first dungeon in the world, and he's the only person on Earth with a system, at least for a while. All right, go check him out. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll see you next time.
Mm-hmm. Night Nation. It's partly on Royal Road, I think, but it should have migrated to Amazon as part of KU. And it's the story of a girl who is in a village in a fantasy world and is cut off from magic. And it's her journey from someone who's not accepted by the community and turning into her own. And what I like is that a lot of such stories of coming of age story are all about finally being accepted by the community or something. But that person doesn't do it. She sets off on her own and actually finds her people. I mean, not her actual people, but more a found family. And there's a lot of the importance of being able to have self-esteem, saying no, setting boundaries, accepting that other people don't have your best interest at heart, etc. But at the same time, remaining open to friendship and being there for others, etc. are all very present, and I really enjoyed the story. So it's one of the lesser known stories on Royal Rodan. And the other one, let me find the exact name, because it's a Ostomi name, so it's always very long. Memoirs of Your Local Small Time Villainess. So the way I like it is it starts with the basic plot, which is the person, someone who is reincarnated into the body of basically like a meat boss, and not exactly, but even worse than that, like almost the tutorial boss. And the way it's interesting is that the main character has a very advanced understanding of the world she's in. But it's also an extremely complex world with politics. Religion is very present. And it's also not the traditional, the Inquisition is bad, etc. trope. No, it goes very deep into it. And the main character is forced into the psyche of her host. I mean, the person she replaces. And the person she replaces is haughty, distant, arrogant. And just she can't help herself. So there is this noble personality that she can't give up on, that she can't cast off. And it's just not, I don't know, it really feels like a mysterious, noble person, mastermind character who knows everything. And it's really fairly well done. I really enjoyed it. And the last story, Yes?
No, you're fine. You're killing me. I don't have the time for all the stories.
Yeah.
It sounds very good.
Okay. Last one, if you don't know it, Godclads by Mammal. Godclads.
Of course.
Which tells the story of it's the world building. It's incredible, and the prose is to die for. And it's basically a magical planet with a mega city at its center, and the mega city is like hosts billions of people over several layers, and it's beautiful and complex. And the main character is basically a ghost based hacker who happens to be a monster, and it's one of those unique stories that came out of nowhere, and that there's no real comparison. The only comparable story in terms of world building, originality, and prose is Craft Sequence by Alex Gladstone. Max Gladstone. Thank you.
Yes.
Sorry, you're Max. So good. You're Max. I'm Alex. So I got it mixed. But yes, Max Gladstone, Craft Sequence. For me, it's only stories that's comparable in terms of everything. And it's really that good. Yeah. So yeah, Godclads. also on our world.
God Clans is definitely God tier. I think I think one of the reviews said that it's a story where people are wearing the taxidermied corpses of gods to gain power.
Yep.
And that just says it all. I think there's a bit of Necromunda in there. There's a bit of Eldritch Horror in there. There's a bit of, lots of Max Gladstone, very good prose in there.
I'll also add to the list because the corporation wars and the extraterritoriality aspect is strong. Yeah.
It's a really good story.
Yeah, he came out of nowhere, right?
Mammal kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, and we're lucky we have him because he's a fellow Shanghainese, actually. Yeah,
oh!
Yeah. So let me tell you, this man is extremely busy. And the amount of text he manages to pull out of, I don't know where, but he's like constant state of death march. Anyway.
Yeah, death march.
Yeah, brilliant guy.
Yeah. I don't know how he does it, and I really wish he wouldn't.
Yeah. If he knew how hard he worked, you would absolutely not believe he can produce that much and at that level of quantity.
I think I know he's active on Code A, and I'm like, hot damn, I couldn't.
Yeah, me neither.
But maybe it's also this like constant state of near death that makes him write the prose that he does. So maybe it's not talent, maybe just delirium.
He's like a shonen protagonist, always pushed to his limits to produce the perfect content.
Mammal, if you're listening to this, go take care of yourself.
Please.
Please.
Also, I owe you a beer.
All right, cool. Well, we're at 1 hour and 4 minutes, and I guess this is the main episode. If you like this and you want some bonus content, well, there's always my Patreon because I need money and I need to live. Also, there's Alex's Patreon. You can subscribe to many of his tiers, and he's got so much stuff on there. It's so good.
Just go on Royal Road. None of my stories are on KU right now, so they're all free mostly. So,
yeah. I can see you're a very shrewd businessman.
I catch them with the patron that's like 6 months in advance. And then once they're in it, they realize they can't get out.
You just activated his trap card. All right. No, cool. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the video. I hope you enjoyed my graying hair and my cool Bolin outfit. And I'll see you guys next time. And if you're on Patreon, then the show keeps going.